At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Music. But they showed no corrections of any kind.
Tonight we're talking about the 1984 biographical period drama, although I say that very loosely, Amadeus, written by Peter Schaefer and directed by Milos Forman. Peter Schaefer's play of the same name had debuted in 1979 on the West End.
I was staring through the cage of those meticulous ink strokes. At an absolute beauty.
Schaefer's play was based on the 1830 play Mozart and Salieri by Alexander Pushkin. The one-act play was also turned into an opera in 1897 by Nikolai Rimsky. All of these pieces take a look at the rivalry between Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart and Antonio Salieri and speculate that this rivalry led to both men's downfalls and Mozart's death. Set in the Imperial Court of Vienna during the 1780s, when Salieri was the court composer for Joseph II of Austria. In the world of music, and especially in opera at the time, there was a rivalry between the German and Italian schools. Salieri and his group of Italians were said, in letters found of Leopold Mozart's father, to be holding Mozart and his work back, and sabotaging him when he lived in Vienna. Emperor Joseph was interested both in German language and Italian language opera, and would commission operas to play at the Royal Theater.
Italian is the proper language for opera. All educated people agree on that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Chamberlain?
He also played both the violin and piano and acted as a kind of royal talent scout. Joseph commissioned operas for Mozart while he lived in Vienna, including the controversial The Abduction from Seraglio, The Marriage of Figaro, which until then had been banned as a play, and in Vienna, the Magic Flute was commissioned by the head of a theatrical troupe to play at the Weiden Theater.
Young man, we're going to commission an opera from you. What do you say?
Majesty.
Did we vote in the end for German or Italian?
Mozart's position in Vienna, where he initially flourished but then began to languish in debt and poverty, and the mysterious circumstances of his final illness and death at age 35, led to speculation that he had been poisoned, and because of the rivalry between the two of them surrounding the court composer position, in the decades after his death, Salieri was blamed for poisoning Mozart. Although no evidence of this has ever been found, Mozart and Salieri and Amadeus both explore this idea. Amadeus stars Tom Hulce as Mozart, F. Murray Abraham as Salieri, Elizabeth Barrage as Constance Mozart, and Jeffrey Jones as the Emperor Joseph, as well as Simon Callow, Roy Dotrich, and Cynthia Nixon. Critics of Amadeus have long pointed out the lack of historical accuracy in the film. It's a work of fantasy that imagines Salieri in his old age, telling the story of his life and the admiration that curdles into jealousy and then hatred of Mozart. Salieri sees himself as a distinct mediocrity with the exceptional ear for music and culture, punished by God to live in a court where a vulgar child like Mozart is blessed with undeserved and unrivaled talent. Mozart lives in frivolity and scandal that would destroy anyone else's life and career, while Salieri sees himself as a man who lives piously and simply, while Mozart revels in excess. It drives Salieri into madness, and he sets out to destroy Mozart, which he thinks will punish God. By the end of his life, with Mozart long dead from being overworked into an early grave, Salieri sits in an asylum, having been accused of killing Mozart. It's a classic revenge story that destroys both people in a convoluted plot to fulfill the basest desires.
Or this. This. Yes. Better? What do you think?
The role of Mozart has long been coveted, and Kenneth Branagh, Mark Hamill, and Tim Curry all wanted it. Mark Hamill and Tim Curry had played Mozart in Amadeus on Broadway. Miloš Forman shot much of it in Prague, including the Estates Theater where Don Giovanni was debuted by Mozart in 1787. Amadeus was nominated for 11 Oscars and won 8 of them at the 1985 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor for F. Murray Abraham, Best Art Direction, Best Costume Design, Makeup, and Sound. Before I introduce the panel, please like this video and subscribe to the Movie Night Extravaganza YouTube channel. Then hit that bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. Super chats are now open. If you have any pressing questions, send us a super chat, which helps me maintain the expenses for the show, which I'm obligated by the rules of the Geneva Convention to stop everything and ask the panel. Another way to help us out is to become a patron and give us money every month. In exchange, you get access to all of our after parties, bonus content, and we'll tell you even more movies we watched recently. Patreon.com/Movie Night Extra. We have a Movie Night Extravaganza Discord. There's an invite link in the episode description, and we have a Letterboxd HQ account, so those are two more places to follow along with us. Okay, let me introduce the illustrious panel. We are live right now on This Space. If you aren't following them, join This Space TV on YouTube. Link below. Conan Neutron is the co-host and senior producer for Movie Night Extravaganza, host of Britonic Reversal, an independent Film Critics of America film critic, and the frontman for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Check out his music at neutronfriends.bandcamp.com. Christine Oakes is a co-host of Movie Night Extravaganza, a streamer on Twitch, twitch.tv/cosmopolitics, a host at This Space, hosting Christina's Corner, and is across social media at Cosmopolitics and on Letterboxd at Christina. Lauren Chouinard is a writer and social media strategist who writes film reviews for Merry-Go-Round magazine and is on Letterboxd at Lonely Goat Herd. I, of course, am the court composer and host, Boris Miller. I will speak for you, Father. I speak for all the mediocrities in the world. I am their champion. I am their patron saint.
That's right.
Court composer.
All right, peace, Salieri. You would have loved podcasts.
He'd just be venting his frustrations about Mozart the entire time.
he has the Vienna classical music podcast, and the whole time he's like, Mozart wasn't that good.
He's just spilling tea constantly. That would be the show. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that would, and people would love it. It would be huge. Lauren, welcome.
Hello. So happy to be back.
Always good to have you. I know this has been one on your list to do for quite some time. Actually, it's been on our list for quite some time, too, because we always talk about, and I saw in the comments, our disdain for the biopic genre, and this is one of the good ones.
I know. I was so surprised that you guys hadn't done it yet, especially since we've covered so many other music biopics. But this
is very loosely based. It's given like Catherine, it's like The Great on Hulu. Like a lot of people like the satirical approach to these classical figures in our history. And the first time I heard about Amadeus was a segment on I Love the 80s. And I was like, yeah. Mozart I was like, Mozart had a funny movie? What?
Okay. Well, it's almost like something like they did like the Weird Al biopic or like something like that, where it's like
yeah.
It's so where,
like all of
that,
it
that one's like the more extreme example to be
oh,
sure.
Yeah. But I'm saying like it's something where you play it so fast and loose and satirical with the source material, I guess, as it is. I mean, the thing is, we don't really actually know that much. I mean, we're finding out more, I guess, every day, but there's a lot of stuff where it's like, you know, like letters from Leopold Mozart, like Leopold, yeah. comma, Mozart's father, not Leopold Mozart's father. But he had this whole thing where he was constantly writing these letters, talking shit about the Italian composers in the court of Vienna, you know, constantly trying to block, you know, Mozart's, like, whether it was his court composer job that he eventually got, or, you know, all these different things. He was constantly talking shit about how there was a conspiracy of Italians. So this, you know, Amadeus as a play takes that and just kind of runs with it, because we, like, who knows? You know, it's not like people are penning like their memoir, I guess, in this time period. Like, people kind of just ran and then, you know, passed away. We don't even know what Mozart really passed away from. Like, there's all these theories.
He died from eating too much raw pork. That's how he died. End of story. That's what my music appreciation teacher said. Okay. So I believe him.
It's plausible. It is. Yeah. I was going to say, I like the fact that so much of like the facts and like the facts are very loose in this, but a lot of them are really rooted in reality. So even if there are like a lot of liberties taken, it's kind of fun as like a appreciator of classical music to like be able to root out like what's real and what's not. And also there's just a lot of like half truths. There might have been some sort of like rivalry going on between Mozart and Salieri, not to the degree that they show in the film. Like, Mozart and Salieri were friends. Like, Salieri like taught Mozart's kid music.
Yeah.
One of the things I appreciated about the film last night when I was watching it was they were having a discussion about like, oh, I didn't miss a single performance of Don Giovanni. And that's true. Salieri went to every single one of Mozart's. He was like number one Mozart fanboy of all of the like various operas he did. So like they sprinkled in a lot of, you know, historical fact in with tons of liberties.
Yeah. Well, and one of the crazier things is that they, you know, they filmed a lot of this in Prague, and the actual theater you see Don Giovanni performed in is the real theater that in the 1780s, they debuted Don Giovanni. And so like, there's all these really cool kind of facts to this where you could see things that are really, now I think it's not called the Royal Theater anymore. Now it has like a different name, but like there's all of these different little like tidbits that you can find out about it. Like every single note that's played in the entire movie is a real, like is one of the actors pretending to play a note. Like that's how, you know, that's how in depth they got with certain
Right. Because the actor who played Amadeus, and by the way, can I just say
Tom,
okay, cool.
yeah Tom Hulse,
cool, yep. All right, I couldn't remember his name off the top of my head. I don't need to. So he he was a musician, but yeah, he like went to great lengths to look the part, like to look like he was doing the part exactly. I lost my train of thought now, so I had something to go with that, but
yeah, he's I every time I see him I think about fucking Animal House. Animal House. But
I remember now, it's amazing that it's called Amadeus when it's Salieri's story.
Yeah, right?
So ultimately he would be like the best supporting actor. This cleaned up at the Oscars, by the way.
Yes.
But not for him. But like, it really, like, it was almost a complete sweep.
It's kind of crazy. It's kind of like how the Emmys were with the Penguin, but without Colin Farrell winning. It's like, it's kind of crazy. Like, Tom,
I love Kristen Melody. She's amazing, but it's like, you're not going to give it to Colin Farrell?
You won't give it to the titular role.
Like, the guy that you're like, no, that's not him. Really?
Yeah. What's crazy, too, about with Amadeus is that it's adapted from a play that a lot of people have done in the past. Like, the most known is Tim Curry and Sirrie MacKellen, who fought to play these roles.
That's in the wild movie.
And the fact that they did not cast them, because the play was fairly new. I mean, it's one of those cases where a stage show gets adapted real quick in the film because they knew that this would be very entertaining and insightful. And, you know, it's so it boggles my mind that they didn't cast Tim Curry And well, Sir Ian McKellen.
And Mark Hamill played the Amadeus. Yes. Too, of all people. And it was basically like, no, like you're too famous. Like you're Luke Skywalker. We can't have Luke Skywalker playing Amadeus, which is amazing.
Considering the film is the material in this movie.
Just to tie it back to last month.
I have a thing for the F. Murray Abraham. I can't do this justice, so I have to just use the clip that I pulled for this. But this is an amazing story of how F. Murray Abraham ended up playing Salieri.
So while you're queuing that up, I just want to say this is the rare case where the titular character is not the main character in the movie. And I think if you were like to make like a trivia category or something, this would be perfect for that.
A line that Miloš Forman said about this movie that I thought was really interesting. He thinks that it's not even Salieri that's the main character. It's the music that's the main character, which I kind of found.
Settle down,
Miloš. I would agree.
I kind of found that to be like a fascinating...
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
It's a new way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Was F. Murray Abraham your first choice?
F. Murray Abraham, for the role of Salieri, it was a little bit by accident. I never saw him in any, which was, that was his luck, because probably I would not even call him for audition, because the film which I saw later was awful. No, he was reading for the part of director Rosenberg. It's a small part in the film, you know. And after him was coming one young man to read for Mozart. But I didn't have anybody to read, you know, Salieri. So I asked F. Murray Abraham if he can stay a few more minutes and help me to read Mozart and read Salieri to him. And it was very interesting, because he knew suddenly that this is not the part he's fighting for. So he was wonderful. Suddenly he was not nervous at all. He was just reading Salieri, and Salieri became so real and alive, you know. And so I said, listen, this is great. If you can do this like this, so I would fight for you to become Salieri. And it was a fight because, you know, every major star wanted to be in the film, you know, to play Salieri. It was enormous. And he didn't believe me. He didn't. I told him, listen, wait, I have to convince, you know, people that I want you to play the part, you know. Mozart, that was a different story, Tom Hulce, because Mozart, I wanted to be unknown face, because I wanted people to see Mozart and not XY actor, how he plays Mozart, you know. But Salieri could have been a big star, you know. So I will fight for you. He didn't believe me. He accepted part in another movie. So when I finally said, you know, I want Salieri to be F. Murray Abraham, so we couldn't use him. But Saul Zaentz, Peter Schaeffer, you know, they were very, very smart. They said, no, we'll wait, because he's really right on. You know, so that's how he got the part, F. Murray Abraham.
Nice.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
I really like, I mean, the other people that were up for that role, very interesting list, but like, I just can't see anybody but him in that part. And to think that he just came in for a bit role.
Christina, do you want to do the list? Do you want to?
So good, but yeah, this is going to be amazing, because it is going to be like, everyone, I'm like, that's so different. That's also so different. That's indeed.
By the way, F. Murray Abraham, the three of the movies, right? The movie that he accepted a part in, I think you guys probably know what it is. Scarface was the movie that he
accepted. Hello to my little friend.
And he was great in that. But the other the small roles he was known for before this, Serpico and All the President's Men. R.I.P. We still have to do that Robert movie. Bradford. I don't know how we haven't, but
have we not done? We've never done that. Wow.
Yeah. We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah. Wow.
But it's like, you know, but just for like a
that we should have Sam Cedar on for. Maybe I'll
ask taste of that would be amazing. But a little taste of like, what F. Murray Abraham had been doing. Of course, like famed Broadway actor. At this time, like, but an actor's actor, right?
Yeah. And like, he only was really starting to get let in the door for movies as a that guy character actor. Oh yeah, get him to do it. That's that guy. He can be like, what nationality doesn't matter. You know, like, it could just be like vaguely ethnic looking, good character actor.
Yeah,
not that he even looks that ethnic, but I'm just saying that was the casting director's thing.
It was
such was the style of the times. Christina, lay us out some of the other alt castings, if you don't mind.
Okay. Obviously, of course, we have Tim Curry and Mark Hamill. And again, like we mentioned before, the ties to Star Wars just would have been too weird and it wouldn't have worked out. I think Tim Curry was also getting cast in other films around the time.
What is Legend? Is that like around
five? Okay. He also did the Worst Witch in Annie. He did Annie. Mm-hmm. I think
I was going to say he did Annie around the same time as well.
Yeah.
The Worst Witch. Wow.
Also, Kenneth Branagh was also supposed to, because he had done it as well.
Spoiler alert. Worst Witch not being covered in Witches Month.
Yeah, I was going to say Worst Witch.
We're going to be skipping that one.
Wow, I can't believe we didn't think about that one.
Exactly.
Started out with the Best Witch, and then
also Amy Irving was, since she did the stage show, they wanted Milos wanted her, but she passed on the opportunity to do that, which to me made more sense, because it's like, you know, if you're not gonna have Mark Hamill or Tim Curry or Siri McKellen, then like, what the, you know, you can play loose, you know, a little bit with that casting.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to see if there's
any. Yeah. So Legends more. 85. So, and you gotta imagine Tim Curry's thinking like, oh, Ridley Scott, high fantasy. I get to be like the big villain.
But then he always talks about how much he hated the costume. Now, Meg Tilly originally was cast as Stanza, but tore a leg ligament in a street soccer game the day before she was filming her first scene. Elizabeth Berridge, Rebecca De Mornay from Risky Business, and Diane Franklin,
yes, indeed, yeah,
screen tested as replacements with Berridge, a friend, really? Had final two choices being flown to Prague for a week screen testing on set before Berridge got the role. Now, for those who don't know who Diane Franklin is, she's known for the Amityville Horror, the sequel, the second one that kind of details the family's origin story where she was like that. Yeah. That I love that movie.
I've seen it.
Yeah, but like, so well, so there is I'm trying to figure out what other ones.
Well, Rebecca De Mornay, let's see, so she would have been like, what, Runaway Train?
Because
it's a few years before Hand of Rocks the Cradle, which is like the big one for her. But of course, yeah, Risky Business is she's amazing in it. By the way, that movie is a lot weirder than people remember. But
Risky Business?
Yeah, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like a classic 80s thing. Like pretty much every 80s movie, it's like, oh, that's a weirder movie than everybody remembers.
I mean, he's ostensibly running a brothel at one point.
Yeah.
Like, and that is the titular Risky Business. That was like, oh my God, how do I not remember any of this?
Just to take those old records out. That's all you remember.
It's not what I remember.
That's all you remember. Let's see, there's any other casting.
Those are all so different though.
I don't know if this rumor is true, but I heard that also Mick Jagger and David Bowie tested for Mozart.
Was this before or after they collabed doing Dancing in the Street?
I think it was
they did it together as a team, as a dance team.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, you're honest with me, Lauren, because Herzog, when he did Fitzcarraldo, which is 82, Mick Jagger was going to be his, they wrote out the part, but was going to be like his sidekick, his like developmentally That's disabled right. sidekick. And they even like shot test footage of it that you can see like on YouTube or yeah. in the comment. So he was like really kind of trying to make a big play towards acting.
I was going to say Mick Jagger, secret opera fanatic, just like wanted to be involved.
I mean, it's you know, it's music involved. You know, it makes more sense than Free Jack. Free Jack, True. Everybody. Thank you.
Yeah. You know what's also crazy too?
But we would be almost too serious though. I think I actually think he's a good actor. I just think he didn't have usually the best material to work with, but like, mm-hmm. I like that. I mean, the laugh, right? You were talking, Lauren, earlier about is it historically accurate? Whether that's historically accurate or not, it's amazing.
He based it on a director he knew, Conan. He based it. Tom said he based it on a director that he knew. I'm like, who's the director? Name it. Also, Burt Reynolds.
Salieri. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Maybe it's time that I take revenge. Man,
he would have got to shave the mustache, right? I mean, that would have been historically accurate.
I always think of Burt Reynolds as chewing gum because of like the SNL sketch where he's like maybe it's time that I spit in the face of God. What do you think, God?
But also, Salieri is not cool though. The whole thing is that he's not. The cool guy. He's not the new hotness, and I just don't think that's an ill fit for Burt.
Also, apparently there was a stage production in Paris, starring and directed by Roman Polanski.
Oh,
who played Mozart.
Never heard of him.
Wow. I know. I've heard. But yeah, so some of those casting choices were something. That's for sure.
I wonder when he said
Mel Gibson everybody. Auditioned too.
Mel Gibson. Did, right?
Yes.
But when he
said Larry?
He said everyone wanted
that's Mozart.
When he said everyone wanted to play Salieri, I wonder what list he had for that. I mean, you know, who knows?
Who was everybody at this point? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
very interesting alt castings. And the thing is, like, perhaps maybe when they were conceptualizing it, because you can see it in like the costume choices and a lot of the like interesting stylistic things that they do in the show, that it's like Mozart was like the rock star of the day, and they tried to really like bring some of those modern elements to really like show that visually with like the pink wig and the like, you know, kind of mullet styles and so forth that aren't historically accurate.
Falco like, song
accept them stylistically, and so maybe the casting choices they were going for, they're like
they wanted to make it 80s synths G. Like they wanted, like if they were to remake Amadeus today, it would be vastly different aesthetic wise because they brought like an 80s vibe to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean it's well, that's what's so great, is it's a historical biopic, but it's also firmly rooted in the era that it's made in, but not in a way that's like super cringy. Yeah, and in a way, like Amadeus is punk rock, right? In this situation,
Falco?
And Salieri is like he's like the old like dinosaur classic rock band that like is like sees like there's something new happening.
Yeah. I really like that comparison. That's so true.
Well, also too, a lot of people take F. Murray Abraham's that portrayal as a baseline for when they portray like Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer. They said just he studied that portrayal to really get into Strauss's mindset to make Oppenheimer be this like rival, when really it was more like a one-sided beef, you know?
So it's a scene beef with one side.
Yeah, exactly. So when a lot of people are doing like these characters where it's like, you know, it seems like there's a rivalry, but it seems more one-sided and kind of cheeky, they always say, look at F. Murray Abraham's portrayal in Amadeus. Mm-hmm. That is a good baseline to really tap into that. And I feel like a lot of people don't give him the credit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because it's really like the entire movie, he's telling the story. So there's all these parts that like, I mean, people talk about it with the scene that got cut and then for the theatrical one and then added in again, where he, you know, he humiliates Stanza by making her take her top off. And then you know, she's ready to like have sex with her. And then he's like, you know, get out. Or whatever, and people, you know, like things like that, where it's like, are we supposed to take away from that really happened, or is this something that he's kind of, you know, he's already insane, like it's already consumed him, he's destroyed himself, he's in a fucking asylum where I don't, we like realize, you know, from the beginning, but also like at the end, you really realize like how much of an asylum, I mean, like,
oh, he is, there are like, people that are very unwell in this, and clearly he is one of them, in a in a different way, which is funny when you think of what's Milos Forman's other huge movie, One for the Cuckoo's Nest.
I was going to say, like, I think that the exploration of like mental health and psychosis that you can really dive into with this movie, like, I, and what was so interesting is like the use of music throughout the movie, like in non-diegetic and diegetic music, is sometimes the lines are very blurred to show the psychosis. And I also kind of like the fact that especially in like the scenes where Salieri is like finishing the Requiem when Mozart is on his deathbed, and it's kind of like they're both hearing it in their heads, it's like they're finally for the first time like speaking the same language, whereas like throughout the rest of the movie it's like there are real performances that are happening, but then sometimes it's like, okay, but is that like a flashback, or is are these memories that are just existing in Salieri's head? And the fact that that line is always a little blurry, I think really shows the psychosis in a way that's also very like, I don't know.
So it's if I would say, building on that, that's like the Rashomon effect, but only from one person who's the most unreliable narrator.
That's a great comparison.
And someone who when this story was going on would have been an unreliable narrator, but it's decades of this later. So it's like not only is he at the point where he's an unreliable narrator, he's been soaking in these juices. You know, like in his mind, or because you know, you could see it, you could feel his mind going as the movie goes on. He's really cracking up, and it's like, all right, what would like 50 more years or 40 more years of that do to somebody's psyche? Like that psyche is just.
Also, Lauren, are you still doing a production of Spring Awakening at your local playhouse?
Oh, I just closed it this last weekend.
Oh wow!
Well, you know who produced that and won a couple of Tony Awards? Tom Hulce himself, actually.
That's right.
He's a well-known Broadway producer. Like a lot of people don't, like when they think of like Amadeus, they obviously they're like, yeah, that guy, you know. But he also was the voice of the Hunchback of Notre Dame for the Disney movie, did his own singing. He's had quite the career, and people always will remember as Amadeus, but I'm like, no, this guy's also a well-known Broadway producer. Like he's produced quite a few Broadway shows that have won and nominated multiple Tony Awards. He's a king, and he deserves like much more credit, in my opinion.
Especially he had this crazy run where he was in everything from like, you know, I mean, from Animal House, to Parenthood with like Steve Martin or whatever. Like he had all these different movies on, like almost like the schizophrenic run of movies that he was on, where all different genres, and he was like getting a lot of attention. And then he just quit, quit. I mean, I think probably the 80s were pretty hard. I mean, he was closeted, like he was gay, and he came out later, and like, you know, he's out now, like an older gentleman, I guess. But I think he had like a hard run. I mean, it wasn't easy being like a gay actor, I think, in the 80s, like especially.
I mean, arguably, it's no picnic now.
Yeah,
but it's especially back then.
Yeah, but it's like, so he quit acting, I think, and then he became like a producer both of movies and of and on Broadway, which is kind of a cool, you know.
From the comments, Matt Gilbert here. I love the scene where he's notating the Requiem as Mozart lies in his sickbed. As unreliable as he is, it's so beautiful. They're finally speaking the same language.
Yeah.
I think you have a different movie if you don't show that.
Yeah.
It's like he had to let go. Like he had to let go of like whatever animosity or jealousy or whatever he built up in his head about Mozart, and just really let it go and appreciate the music.
Like a lot of haters, he's like the biggest enemy, but also the biggest fan.
Yeah.
Right. And that's part of my friend
I was watching the movie with yesterday was like, when are we going to make a fan cam of like Salieri and Mozart's love story?
I'm going to look
at right now.
You have the part where he both kneecaps the performances of Don Giovanni, and then, you know, like the actual Salieri, he sits in the booth watching each performance. And it's like, he's somehow both.
Just doing that Orson Welles gif with like the slow clap with like the ominous lighting. Just looks like so pissed.
But like, I don't know. Like, there's at the end of it, you really like one of the more heartbreaking. I mean, there's a lot of heartbreaking things about this, but like, you realize as he's kind of killed off Mozart by like overworking him to death, pretty much, you realize like Mozart never felt the same animosity at all. Like Mozart, in fact,
he was fucking around and having fun. Like everyone,
he was like, oh, that's my friend.
Yeah. Well, and
hey,
like,
buddy.
So
He's like,
I went to conservatory for like music school. That was originally what I was going to do. I love this podcast because I get to use all of my college degree that I so all my finally for. So exactly. So before I switched,
well, it, last one on for his conclave, right? You got to use history.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was, yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, you want to talk about religious trauma? Hold on, I got credentials.
Hold my beer.
So. But I went to Conservatory of Music, and you see so much of that in like any conservatory environment, because everyone is there obviously because they really love music. They really love their craft. They want to be better. But there are just some people, these like savant types, that everything just seems to come so easily to them. And mm-hmm. like, even if they're the nicest person in the world, it's like, you can't help but just like stew in that. And like, it takes a very strong person mentally to get through conservatory, just from the idea of like, it's the most like competitive environment. There are very few jobs left, especially for like opera singers and things like that. If you're a soprano,
oh, yeah, forget it.
You're trying to make it as a soprano, like forget about it. You're like, it's so hard. And so you have to keep your wits about you and like not succumb to that like extreme jealousy. And there are a lot of times where I was just like, oh yeah, like I know what that feels like to watch your contemporaries, people that you even respect around you, and you just
look
of the industry.
You're talking to someone who's multiple times over the opening bands for us have gone on to great fame and fortune, and good on them. Yeah. They're incredibly talented and they deserve everything they get, but however, it has happened many times, and there's things you can choose to do. You can be like, wow, that sucks, why isn't it me, blah blah blah, or you can be like, hey, we're all running our own race.
Exactly.
You know, they you know, it's always a combination of luck and success anyway, and you know, sometimes it's about being in the right place in the right time. And but the thing is, as an artist, you have to make the choice to reconcile that. Otherwise, you end up like you being the chief haters club, like Solaire.
Yeah.
Where you're just like consumed by it because you're like, why them? And it's like, well, no, it's not why them. Like that doesn't even matter. Because so much of it, yeah, talent does matter. Talent matters a lot. But it's all about being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, it's just such
by the
a
way, this was the Orson Welles. You got to look the look on his face.
it's like Conan. It's exactly what.
Yes,
you
said. Very good.
But this is Mozart. You know what I mean?
Like, right. Oh no. Yeah, undeniable. So, second part of that would be like, and some people are just undeniable talent. Like, this just comes easy for you because you're made for this.
Yeah,
and like the rest of us have to work really hard at it, and that makes people insane where you're like, you just poop these out, huh? Okay.
Right, but you can't, but like, I don't know, it's crazy to think about like being alive in the time of Mozart, right? Where it's like this person who in the year 2025, like there are very few, I feel like, historical figures that we really have this connection to, where it's like people play Mozart for their babies. So like they think that like playing Mozart that close to their kid's ear
that
like,
has also been debunked, but I still think people should do it anyway.
or like people being like, a lot of people like to say Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys was like a pop version of a Mozart. Like that man knew music and he heard things and did things that Mike Love could never do.
I was saying, his chief hater was in the band.
Yes, his own cousin, who, by the way, at his funeral was like, I wrote Good Vibrations. Remember that, yeah, right? Yeah, I'm like, yeah, but who did the fucking musical arrangements?
That is peak, like, Salieri shit.
No, it's like...
That is
I'm ready for that movie to come out.
Salieri. Yeah,
bitches who live for the drama.
Even Al Jardine's like, fuck him, man. Like...
Yeah,
no, I never. So as someone that, like, you know, as a kid, like, tried to learn piano, and I'm not built for it.
But
like, you always would see, like, when you were playing classical music, it was like the variations, and you never really thought about that until, like, watching this movie, where it's like variations are Mozart taking a piece of music that like very much exists, which he did do the variations on Salieri, like it's like a classic song, like, and it's in the movie. But like, when you're sitting there and you're playing the thing, like, that's Mozart saying like, oh, I bet I can improve this song.
Yeah,
which is
it doesn't just happen in classical. It happens in all genres, where somebody will take something and you're like, oh wow, that's like totally, that's, I know exactly what that is, but somehow totally different because it's been taken to a new level.
Yes,
by the performance and by the person that usually is someone's very comfortable in their voice, which is something a lot of musicians spend their entire life trying to find. And like when someone finds it like early and at that level, yeah, of course it's going to make you crazy if you had to, you know.
Yeah. Imagine 1983 and Thriller just dropped and you're just hearing nothing but Michael Jackson all the time and you're like, God damn it.
Yeah, it'd be like, from the Jackson 5?
Yeah, no, that definitely is
the little one.
The little boy.
Michael Jackson is another example of like a Mozartian figure, almost like a person that was that talented at that young an age. Where it's like
the king of pop, right?
Yeah.
But then again, look at his upbringing. You know.
Yeah, but even though he kept saying my dad was abusive, he's like, look what came of that. He became a perfectionist. He was able to really articulate music. I mean, he didn't know how to read, I know that if you have a good ear for it, you probably could do amazing things. Like, you don't know how to play an instrument, but you know there's something in there that you can use.
Yeah, you're right. Reading music is great, but it's certainly not required.
I was going to say, like, I think that the thing that was the most accurate about the movie in terms of its accuracy was like Mozart's genius around how he worked in terms of like how he would just be able to notate things as they come off of their head. Like notation is a very difficult skill, even for like the most qualified musicians out there. And most musicians train their entire life and like will never be able to do that, where they can just on the first go envision it all in their head and then accurately get it down with no copies. And that's so interesting.
I'm horrible at it. I'm very good at composition, but I'm horrendous at notation. Like the worst. Like I would.
And usually it's like
go sell shoes before I do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of like you're either good at one or the other. Like I feel like the people that are really good with like aural skills are sometimes like not as strong in things like music theory. But Mozart was good at all of it, which is like super infuriating.
It's gonna drive you nuts. Yeah,
you know, I feel like Salieri is like a perfect example of like a music theory guy.
Where it's like 100%. Yeah, that's the difference is that he's very like by the book, whereas Mozart is thinking outside of the box I don't know if this is like true at all that he had some sort of like synesthesia, but like I feel like that could have been like a big factor in the way that he kind of moved through his like savant like composition stuff. It was interesting though, because I was reading more about like you know, people are like, oh, he can just like come up with these things like off the top of his head, so he's probably just like popping them out, like, you know. But I guess like in the letters that his father wrote, it was kind of hard for him. Like he would get writer's block just like everything else, and since he was always like fighting with his boss because his boss was making him do shit he didn't want to do, it was like a little bit. So one of my favorite lines that I read, because I went through like the letters about kind of like how he worked and like how accurate was that to how it was portrayed in the movie. And one of the things that I really paid attention to in the movie was the use of language and this like Italian versus German. In the movie, all of the Italian operas are sung in Italian. But did you notice that all of the German operas are translated into English?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because German's not a nice language. I mean, it's like,
that was done by Milos Forman as a narrative tool to what sounds familiar versus what sounds
exactly that was really effective. One of the things in the letter that I saw that I thought was so funny, because I primarily sing French opera, and Leopold Mozart wrote, "It is true that the devil himself invented their language," talking about the French, "and I see the difficulties that all composers have found in it." So I guess like Mozart literally was like, I'll do anything, but I'm not fucking touching French.
There was a thing at the time, and like all the way until really like World War II, where French was the language of diplomacy. So like in the way that English is now, where it's like the royalty, you know, everyone that was royal, like including as far as like Russia, like the nobles in Russia all spoke French, and the nobles in Germany all spoke French. So like French was like what English is today, where it's like that's the language of that everyone's like, oh well, we all know French, you know. We might not like the language, we might not speak it in a certain way, but like that's our language that we all communicate in, which the average person at that point absolutely did not know French.
It was not the proletariat's language. Real quick, because I know we got to read this the super chat as well. I want to tag that point that people see results, but they don't see the work that goes into the results. So again, the idea of, oh, it all just came so easily to him. Like, yeah, but you weren't in the room while he was like writing this out. And that's something that people often in narratives that involve music or creativity, like, they don't like showing the actual process or the work. They only like showing the result. And the idea, and that's where the whole idea of divine inspiration comes from. No, it's more divine perspiration more often than not. And that's true of genius as well as anyone else. It just hits differently because Salieri in this case is someone that, like, he'd be like a grammarian, where, like, mm-hmm. he's really focused on the structure and the rules of what it is and sucks at composition. It's like, yeah, but nobody cares if your grammar is perfect, if what you write is something that nobody wants to read. Exactly. And that same kind of way, if nobody wants to listen to your perfectly composed music, then what does it even matter? You know? Mm-hmm. And that these are the, like, larger issues that are at play between these two guys and the back and forth. And the fact that at no point ever does he ever have an epiphany mm-hmm. of why it maybe doesn't hit the same as Amadeus' stuff.
He doesn't reflect inwardly. Instead, he shifts the blame outwardly to God, to his contemporaries, to his bosses, to the world.
I love the fact that
just real quick, I think of Benicio del Toro. Do you see what God did? What do you this is the joke. It's like that. And it's like, what? God didn't do that, you idiot. What are you talking about?
But no, I love the fact that he admits that he's a mediocre talent, right? Like he's a hack, kind of. Like he does not have the talented gift, but he is still so narcissistic and so consumed by the sense of self that he thinks that God is torturing him. Someone that nobody at the point where he's telling the story remembers. Nobody is like, oh, y'all hear that Salieri? That shit slaps.
Yeah, so that shit was a bop.
nobody's playing Salieri at all, but he still is consumed with the idea that God is specifically torturing a mid-composer. One of probably 1,000 composers running around Vienna trying to get the attention of,
with strained credulity as an avowed secular humanist who does not believe in God. God is not thinking of you.
Yeah.
Like you don't even rate, you're not even good enough to like warrant a notice. Like, even if like we lived in a case where that theism was objective reality. And that's what's so great about the fevered egos of the painfully mid men of this period where everyone,
I had the confidence of one mediocre man.
Right, yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice?
the other thing that I think is interesting,
and the Jeffrey Jones character, sorry to invoke the literal devil, is another example of that too, because he keeps him penned up and pinned down because he is jealous of what he can do. And he's really, you know, as royalty doesn't have to give excuses as to why he does something, he just does it. But that's another artifact of the times.
I like the choice though that I hate when someone's really talented and also just like one of the worst people on earth. But like Jeffrey Jones is such a talent. Like he comes up with these things so like off the top of his head where the thing where he does over and over again is the Emperor where he goes every time someone gives him a point. And it's like this ineffectual kind of like this thing that tells you all, like it literally tells you who this guy is.
If I had a dollar for every time in my like day to day life, I say, well, there it is.
Jeffrey Jones caused quite a controversy in my town because he did this film called Who's Your Caddy? And they were filming at Woodside. After the fact, he was not supposed to be anywhere near children. Back in 2007,
I was like, "Whoa!" Well, there's the whole scene in this where he's going to the emperor and he's telling him like, "Oh, Mozart molests little girls," and it's like, "So does the emperor, bro." Like,
yeah. That's house, bitch.
But you know who this character is by that like ineffectual every time he asks.
It's a great depiction of that,
and he never comes up with the. Yeah. No, neither his advisors or him ever comes up with the actual, like, it's always someone like Mozart that has that creative burst of energy where he's like, let it be German, please. Like the advisor kind of going back and forth. It's like watching a game of Pong or something, you know, they're just kind of playing that on the screen.
Well, because the power is the point.
Right? Yeah.
Because the point is, you don't have to have a rationale when you're the one in power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he was like,
you don't have to be right. You're right inherently.
The Emperor Joseph, obviously they say it in this, he was Marie Antoinette's brother, but he was this, he was like this very interesting figure that he did learn how to play violin and piano not very well, but he also like had this desire to make, to make Austria like this world power culturally as well as, you know, literally and like militarily. So he did really commission all these operas. He commissioned all this art, But like the things he had certain things that he really liked. Like he didn't make ballet. He didn't make a role where it was like no ballet, but he didn't like ballet. So ballet was not like nobody, because everyone was so built to his tastes, I guess. Like nobody ended up going like,
that's such a great scene though, where he's like, what are they doing? Like, where it's just like they're jumping around like without any noise, and like, what is this? Like, what's happening? It's like, oh well, you know, you banned this. He's like, what? No, no, do it. Like, do the thing you're supposed to be doing. And it's such it the fact that it plays out for so long, and you get to see like just this confusion of like, wait, I did, you know?
Yeah,
I wasn't thinking about this. I was thinking about, you know, something else that.
Yeah, like I was thinking about, you know, the ballet I don't like. Like,
can we read? Let's read the super chat real quick. Kick over to you. Off topic. RIP Robert Redford. Also Amadeus 100. Yes, we gave a quick shout out to Robert Redford earlier in the stream. We've done the candidate, and we did three days at the Condor that are in the archives.
The up and coming podcaster named Sam Cedar, I believe is his name.
I mean, All the President's Men. It's amazing we haven't done that one, but we've done the candidate. Crazy.
I was just thinking about the candidate so much this week because
It's one of the best bad endings ever. We're like,
But I was thinking about it with the New York City mayoral race, as like more and more stuff kind of goes to the to the side of like, you know, the Zoran campaign, where he started off, he's like at 1%. You're like, you can literally say anything you want, and more stuff has kind of gotten lost to that as the campaign goes on. And I was like, damn, that's like watching the candidate happen.
It's like the candidate in real time. But Lauren, I mean, you hit on some really cool points with this, and just like working, you know, Mozart working in this environment, in this regal, in this regal environment. But I'm a big fan of, I don't feel like people necessarily should pursue instruments in pursuit of greatness, just pursue it as an expression of like something that exists within. And it's fine to do things as a hobby. I certainly don't, but like, it's, I think that's great, because it's more like, more likely that you're going to be able to be a more well-rounded person that can express things more in a way that's not going to be disruptive, like starting a war because you're pissed off at like, you know, something the servant did or something. But what, I mean, what do you think in terms of all those interactions between he who shall not be named and Mozart?
Well, I think it, and that, this is another thing that is like extremely historically accurate about the movie, was the ways that the nobility really like dictated how these, you know, savant composers like really worked. Because like, for example, like just back in the day, up until like the 19th century, composers were always like employees of like a notable person or a church, right? So they're composing specifically, and they're seen more as like, it was more of a craft than an art, right? And so you would just do whatever the employer wanted you to do. And so with like Mozart's catalog, you'll see a lot of things like, you'll see like serenades and like chamber music, because that's what was going to be played at like banquets for a bunch of like rich people. And then he started to deviate to do more operas and things like that for like the common people. And that was like his side gig. And one of the reasons that he was always like at odds with like the archbishop was that he was literally a part of the gig economy, guys. He was trying to be a freelancer, and they were like, no, you can't do your side hustle while you're working for me on like my boring ass music and teaching my like tone deaf daughter.
Composer, just with an R, composer.
Composer. And so, you know, and so it's very interesting to see how, especially now, that people see opera as like this like high art thing always,
right.
Lot of the operas were seen as like for the common folk, like the Magic Flute, like Die Zauberflaute is done everywhere at the most like prestigious houses of all time. I've seen it 10 times. I was in it. I played Papagena. It was really fun. And so like, but the Magic Flute was supposed to be just for like shits and gigs, and just like to make some side hustle money. Now it is seen as like, you know, everyone knows the Queen of the Night aria, and it's incredibly expensive to get tickets to the Met and things like that. So to see the way that like this art form that was, you know, supposed to be for all people and accessible has become so like regimented.
That's now the elevated, inaccessible medium of the landed and gentry and the rich.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just goes to show that like the way that we like distribute art and like how we apply, I guess, like prestige to art, like really hasn't changed since the 17th century, really.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, as much as people want to distance themselves from, like, oh, music used to be like this and now it's like that. No, it's like the same. The music industry has quite literally not changed. We just push more buttons now.
Yeah, there's just different gatekeepers. A lot more.
Yeah,
exactly. The old walled gardens are the gatekeepers.
Prince
now,
so. Warned us about the sampling epidemic of the music industry, and I feel like it's gotten worse because every time you listen to a song now, it's like, oh, this song feels very nostalgic and familiar, and you're like, oh, fuck, it's a sample from a song.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Sampled website where you can literally see all the different.
Like, for instance, like Tom Tom Club, Genius in Love, Mariah Carey, Lotto, that song, like, they're rich as hell, but like, we've had enough.
Chris France isn't seeing that money though. Maybe a little bit.
One of the only times I ever went to the Met and, like, you know, saw an opera was the Magic Flute, and it's like, you know, one of the few. And I saw it in German. I really liked it. They had you could look down at the. I might have gone twice, but you could look down at the thing and they have the subtitles, and you can, like, kind of. But then you're not really paying attention to the actual music, and it, like, I don't know. Like,
it's on screen or, like, you know.
But I don't know. I went and saw it with my grandma because she was German and she, like, loved classical music. Like, that was most of what she listened to. Classical music and the Beatles, that was the two things that she really listened to. And and she really liked that they went to Hamburg in the 60s and did their tour there. But
got bigger than Jesus.
It's I think it was a little bit before. But yeah, it's like it's that really, like, amazing, like, thing where it's kind of all opera has kind of been collapsed into itself. Because, like, you even have the fucking Nutcracker being played at opera houses, and it's like, that's not that would not have been at the same level as any of the, you know, the many operas that would have been performed at Nobles, like,
because it's been stigmatized on a class basis as a genre, as an art form, in a way that we, to a certain degree, most theater has.
Yeah, it's true. Theater is so inaccessible. If you look at, like, the ticket prices that they have on Broadway, it's, like, absolutely ridiculous. Can I share? Okay, so there's this crazy story that I read yesterday as I was doing my research about our favorite girl, Mags Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher.
Friend of the show. Yeah.
So she went to go see Amadeus, the play, on the West End, obviously. And she came backstage, and she was pissed. She was like, Mozart's not like that. And they're like, well, Prime Minister, like, actually, like, he was kind of like that. He was really crass. I mean, like, we'll get into it, but, like, Mozart used to write these beautiful choral pieces about eating ass. Like, he's that guy. And, you know, and she's just like, he's not like that. He's not like that. And people are like, well, you know, actually, dramaturgically, he is like that. And she was like, I don't think you heard me. He wasn't like that. And it's been
that around. He was alive.
Like, is it's like she's trying, like, because that. She's trying to uphold this, like, this part, this archetype,
the imperial archetype,
society archetype of, like, this uptight, like, noble person, and she's looking at Mozart as someone that's, like, incongruous with, like, classical music, when, like, classical music is for all people, but she really was, like, trying to gatekeep it, and so she was really mad when she saw Amadeus on stage for that reason.
Which is funny because, like,
she did something right, if you ask me.
But her relationship with the royal family was, like, they were treating her like this low class kind of person that was just under the gutter. And that was, like, one of her great insecurities was, like, she had to constantly meet up with the queen, and she was wearing, like, her very shabby, like, kind of clothes. Mm-hmm. And, like, the queen would be standing next to her being like, you could tell there's, like, distaste a little bit on her face. Like, the fuck is this commoner that we just made into the 10-year prime minister?
Well, and that's that attitude. Like, how different is that from, you know, the Geoffrey Jones character? Sorry to keep mentioning his name. And just making these imperious edicts of, like, what is and isn't, you know, considered art or acceptable for people to see, or who is allowed to engage with what. And again, making a blanket statement outline ballet set to music and then not remembering that he did that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's amazing.
And also giving unreasonably stupid feedback, like too many notes.
Yeah, too many notes.
Apparently is
just cut a few.
Amazing. So
there's a debate about it, but apparently that is possibly, like, a real
dude, I believe it because it sounds like, well, and it works.
I think Mozart uses too many notes.
Well, look at fucking Trump in the Kennedy Center. Yeah. Look at the people he's on and people that he personally liked. I mean, Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive, an LGBTQ+ anthem, yet she donated to Republicans. Like, it's It's a common thing now.
In my head, I was thinking you were saying the Emperor Joseph. I will survive. At first, I was afraid.
And then when the Technicolor Dreamcoat, when Gloria Gaynor put it on.
I mean, they're making a movie about that.
I'm sure they are.
The Thatcher thing, right? That is kind of the Salieri character. Like, as he says to Elizabeth Barrage in that, you know, that kind of cut scene, he's like, please don't call me your excellency. I, like your husband, was born in a small town. And it's like, that is somebody trying to uphold this imperial standard while they don't necessarily come from that background. Like, his father's kind of like a grubby merchant. And he's just a small town
girl living in a lonely world, you know?
But he's like, my father died, and suddenly I was brought into this world of Vienna, and, you know, given all these things, which you get the early version of his jealous psychosis, I guess, where he's like, God killed my father. It's like, I think your father choked. We just all saw that. Like,
and then okay, so that's probably a decent segue towards the like very play-esque aspect of your dead father is asking if you'll write something for him. Okay, I understand. Like, we are not as cultured, they were not as cultured in maybe storytelling and things along those lines. Yeah, I think this is before even what we think of as classic horror existed. But it was like, all right, you didn't suspect it could just be a dude with a mask. I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
but it's a
ghost, and then she's like, but, dude, it's not a ghost.
She's like, it's a dude in a mask. But the thing is, it works as a conceit because he has so much unresolved stuff with his father that, you know, it's sort of like a framed debate, kind of wanting to believe situation, something to hang your hat on / work out some clear daddy issues.
Yeah.
And I think that works really well. And in a way that I'm glad it wasn't played for laughs or anything, even though I was certainly like laughing. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like, he thinks this is that's ghost, I guess. Like, but that's such a play thing. That's such a thing that shows in a play, right?
Yeah.
And we think of it as being like hokey now because we have decades of meta-contextual narratives that go back and forth. We can study like the back and forth of the earnestness versus the more cynical approach to things. We cover a lot of them on this very show. We like schedule theme months around them sometimes, but in this case, it totally works in the context of the story and the narrative and what the Mozart character needs from closure.
Yeah.
From his father, which is like really his only family.
Didn't go, ooh.
Okay, I was kind of expecting it the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's another part to it where, you know, you're getting,
and that play looks wild. The actual play they're doing is like, what is this? This is crazy.
I've had it stuck in my head though. Don Giovanni.
When you see like the big like the head like the sets and the headpiece and he's coming through the wall. And if you have no frame of reference, you're like, what am I watching? What is this?
Don Giovanni is pretty fucking metal, to be honest.
Like, yeah.
I do think you're getting this from Salieri's perspective though, and the actual Amadeus play, right? Because I really like that Miloš Forman had problems earlier with adapting multiple of these plays on screen, and then Peter Schaefer, who wrote Amadeus, was also the guy that wrote Equus. So he that was the play that he had put on screen before this, and he had all these problems where people wouldn't get what he was saying in his play or what he was trying to convey. So he actually got hired to do the screenplay for this. And so the original play ends with Salieri admitting that he actually didn't kill Mozart, that he just wrote that because he wanted to get attention. Everyone was forgetting his music, and at the end of it, he cut his wrists and like tried to kill himself, and then wrote out a suicide note that was like, oh, I killed Mozart, that's why I killed myself. But really, it was because he was being forgotten. And he admits like at the end to the priest, like, oh no, I just said that because people thought it anyway, and I just kind
of... Does that even help people remember your music now? Everyone's gonna be, you're gonna remember for the guy who killed Mozart.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we like in this week of where everyone's talking about assassinations, like people think that by assassinating somebody or by being seen to have assassinated somebody, you could be the person that, you know, people at least remember you for something down the line.
Hey, Luigi out here no longer has a terrorism charge against him, so that's a good news.
But in this, right?
Like, he does have three names: Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. You know.
So you're getting this from Salieri, who, like, as far as you can really, like, you know, most unreliable narrator ever, like, as far as you can see, like, did Mozart really feel like it was the ghost of his father? Or is this Salieri going, well, at least, you know, he thought it was his father, and that's close enough to killing him. Like, I was causing, I was making him drink more, and then
well, that goes back also
gaslighting.
One of the interpretations of that is it can go back to that unreliable narrator thing. Like, all right, did it really go down like that? Because you know, like, oh yeah, my costume was so sick that he thought it was, actually his dad. No, I'm sure it wasn't. You know,
I saw his dad in the costume, and then I was like, oh, that's kind of like the costume Don Giovanni. So I put on the costume, and then he was like, oh, that's my dad.
But I think that all works within the context and framework of the story and the movie.
Yeah.
And it makes sense in a way that, again, could be played differently if it was approached from a neutral perspective or just not from perspective of like this single story weaving narrator. Like he's being a rock on tour about this. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's to obviously his own ends. But I think it all works because it gives you an idea of where he's at that moment in time. And then obviously like losing like your, like really your only family other than your wife is going to wreck you.
And there's also like the, I don't know, like, I mean,
especially with unresolved stuff.
You didn't grow up with any kind of religion, but there is like almost this feeling of, like if you grow up religious of any sorts and then you're kind of really angry and you're praying like, you know, like I just wish this person died or something. And then the person dies, like in your head as like a juvenile character, I guess.
Yeah.
You think like, wow, like my prayer got the person to die.
Yeah.
In recent weeks, some weird shit's been going on.
There's that feeling of like Salieri telling the priest the story, and it's like, oh, what's your great sin? And his great sin is just envy. Like his great sin is, that really is what it is in the end. I mean, he does like a lot of shit to get to that point, but it's like, you know, like really he's telling the priest like, I prayed for this guy's downfall, and then the guy had a downfall, and now I've spent the rest of my life stewing and feeling angry and bitter and sick about it. You know, like,
yeah, but I think all that works, and all that is, it's very elegantly done. And this, and again, this is one of the reasons why when we think about the biopic as a genre needs to die, but this is like one of the good ones. Mm-hmm. It is the fantastical nature. It is the quote unquote messy bitch nature of it that works. Like that's what makes it entertaining.
Play like, loose with the facts. It's fun.
No, it's great. And I forgot, and it's easier to do when it's something from like centuries before, but I forgot like how much I was like, oh man, there's like a lot of tea getting spilled on here.
Yeah.
I've seen the movie and I liked it, and I forgot like how much of it is that, which is saying most of it.
Gossip, hey, and farting, but you know.
Which that juvenile nature of like Mozart's sense of humor really is like, you know, the fart, like he had like a scatological sense of humor. Mm-hmm.
Which was like the height of comedy at the time.
Yeah. I mean, it still kind of is.
Like, yeah. Very mature.
So funny, guys.
Loosey goosey, you know. That's why I remember watching the movie for the first time. Because my buddy, John Lo Young, Frankie Rowling, Jr.'s boys, there's two films that his two favorite films that inspired him the most as an actor, Amadeus and Tootsie. I know, but that's a Hoffman movie. I'm like, you went for, I'm like, Amadeus and then Tootsie? I'm like, okay. But like, it's, you know, he's what I remember thinking, I'm like, okay, when I saw it on Island of the Eddies, I'm like, this is purely a comedy, I'm assuming, but it's just a historical fiction at this point. Yeah, but it's just funny that like that laugh is so iconic.
I hate that that's the same as the fucking Tucker Carlson laugh. It's like,
I either didn't know that or redacted from my memory, and either way.
I was gonna say, I'm like, he laughs.
Yeah. What is exactly? What did a small child or minority die?
I was like, I've never heard him laugh.
But it's an affectation. It's an affectation that really works well. I think he Tom Hall said that he got really drunk and that's how he came up with the laugh. He was just like, he was trying to figure out what he was doing for this. I think he was overwhelmed by how many actors wanted to do Mozart, and he was really trying to like find. He was doing heavy research, and then one day he got drunk as fuck and started doing like this laugh, and he was like, the laugh, I must do the laugh. He also said,
it's one of the great like defining character actor things of just like where everyone is like, oh, that's really off-putting.
Yeah,
like it's so in universe, and it is. They say that because it is, but it's also like, yeah, but this guy's got the juice. This guy is like the best that ever was.
It's this thing where like everybody takes a step back, whatever he does it. He's like everyone's like,
yeah.
You're a musical genius. You have a laugh like that.
Yeah.
It makes him laugh
kind of like under the breath too, like where he just does the one and he just goes, ha ha.
The chuckle, the chuckle's almost better, right? Because it's so understated.
My mom's in chat. Hi, mom.
there's this thing where everybody in this movie is, I think this is just a creative thing in some ways. Like, if you're in a creative milieu, I guess, but like everybody's so desperate for each other's approval, including Mozart. Like every single time, they're like, "Did you like it?" But like they almost sound like a young boy when they're like, "What did you think? Did you like it?" And they're so desperate. And then of course you have to shoot kind of like, you have to do one of those things that could be a zinger, you know, whenever they said, "Did you like it?" Like it could only be made by Salieri. Like,
Sally up there. Look like you guys are having fun.
Yeah. It's like you're always trying to one-up yourself. It's like, how many masterpieces can I really make? You know, I want to do something better. It's like Michael Jackson, he was like, "Off the Wall was fine." He's like, "I didn't win enough Grammys." He's like, "So we did Thriller." And then he was like, "I got to do something better than Thriller." I'm like, "Honey, you can't do it."
I think that way, every time I make a new record, you know, I didn't win enough Grammys last time because I won zero Grammys. So I need to win a Grammy this time.
Where's the Michael Jackson version of Amadeus called like Jacko or something? And it's like,
they're actually doing a Michael Jackson.
Two parts.
They are, but I don't want them to do it.
I wish they wouldn't.
No, yeah, I'm with Paris Jackson on this one.
Nobody's like, looking for that.
I do. Yeah, I mean, like, there's this thing where it's like everybody kind of is desperate for each other's approval but including somebody like Salieri, who's way less talented than Mozart. Mozart still wants his approval. Like he's kind of cursed with the ear that really understands this music, like the language of this music, in a way that the other characters don't. While also, you know, also being stuck, kind of not being able to play it himself. So he has like the complete understanding of the music, or at least his own understanding of the music, while not being able to write music to that level. But Mozart still wants his. Mozart's still like, what did you think? Did you like it? Did you like tell me you like it? Please tell me. Like
And look at his validation, father, right? Like he's never getting that validation from his father. So
he's got mad daddy issues, like
don't we all?
Which I mean, his father was like because of the level of talent. Like it'll never be thought of that way, but when they do say the thing about, you know, he's almost like a trained monkey, like it is how his father was treating him, taking him around the Holy Roman Empire, I guess. To every principality from Salzburg to Vienna.
Right. Listen, Letterboxd is a place for film lovers talk at, with, and to each other about the films that they love, maybe the films that they didn't love, maybe the films that they pointed out that Salieri is just a messy bitch who lives for the drama. And of course, it's a bottom-up democracy. Everyone gets to have their say, not just Siskels and Eberts of the world. Everyone gets to chime and opine and say what they feel about the movies. And this is best expressed succinctly, where they are collected weekly by yours truly, for us in the panel to react to, on screen, laugh at, with, etc. These are the Letterboxd one-liners for Amadeus. Let's roll them. Men would rather spend years praying on your downfall than go to therapy.
Oh my God, right? So real.
Go to therapy, guys. Don't be shooting people. Don't be praying for downfalls. Don't be
Can you imagine a version of this where it's Salieri talking to a therapist instead of a priest?
Oh my gosh. Different movie, man.
Yeah, it would be a different movie.
I love that.
The therapist would be like, "What the hell, dude? Chill out."
By the way, does the greatest facial acting of any actor that I think I've seen. Like throughout this, like his facial actor, where he's like half the time he's like he's deeply upset or disturbed, or then sometimes he's like smiling along, and then Salieri will hit him with something that just sinks his face automatically. Yeah. He's like, "Oh, I love that. That's charming. That was you." And he's like, "No, that was Mozart."
Yeah, that's such a great scene. It's like, "Oh yeah, I know that one." It's like, "Cool, that's Mozart." It was like, "Oh, yeah. Awkward.
I'm sorry. I don't recognize it." He's like, "What about this one?"
I know that one. Yeah. If Mozart had a fan club, they would have most certainly been called the Wolfgang.
Oh.
Yeah. I call it Falco.
It's a Wolfgang. I love that they call him Wolfie. They're like, Wolfie.
Wolfie.
It's a good diminutive. Yeah. Solid. Mozart, you have to stop. Your laugh too cunty. Your music too powerful. Your swag too different. They'll kill you, Wolfie. Gotta love the tag. They just hate to see an autistic girl boss winning, too.
I mean, that is that, like awesome. that is kind of the point. Like, I mean, I don't know.
It's Neurodivergent for real. I mean,
yeah, like it's
didn't have a that, name yeah. for
Savant.
Savant.
Fellas, is it gay to think a guy is so cool that you get really angry and denounce God?
This is certainly so. A fan cam. I've been saying.
I don't know. The more I watch it, like, and I've watched it like, several times since I was like, I think the first time I watched it, I was like 13 or 14. But like every time, I really love the idea that somebody understands that they're a mediocrity, but also is so narcissistic that they think that God is torturing them, the mediocrity that won't be remembered by history. With Mozart, like that.
Although it is worth noting, because it hasn't come up, that when this movie came out, it actually sparked interest in Salieri's
composition.
Yeah, it took him out of security.
Yeah,
R.I.P. Salieri. You would have loved Amadeus in the movie.
they have the variations. Like, it is like a famous thing that several people have put on YouTube, their own versions of it. Mozart's variations on Salieri is like a popular piece to do now.
Okay. Yeah.
They also, I think it was in 2010, they actually found a piece in the archives that Salieri and Mozart had written together. Mm-hmm. Like, and they're like, this finally disproves Amadeus. It can't be true.
Right.
But like the article was reported that I was reading. It was like a big article in like a German like paper. It was reported as like this disproves Amadeus, rather than being like, isn't it cool we found this.
Yeah. Reminder, it's not enough to pray for your opponent's downfall and sabotage their career. You should be psychologically torturing them by dressing up as their dead father at minimum.
I've always said that.
If you think you are the hater, you got to try harder. You can't. Yeah. You got to get on this level.
Check this film. You got work to do. I'd be traumatized too if I were the priest.
Yeah, real.
I'm like, you know what? I would just put ear like cotton in my ears and just read like, the Bible or something.
Oh my God,
like,
he's still talking. Yes. I can't believe it.
Well, that's the fucking
48 hours later.
That's the joke from Airplane, where whoever's putting the seat next to him, you see the person hanging themselves or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, guess I'll die. Oh. Amadeus walked so Black Swan could run.
I just want to be perfect.
I was thinking about when I was putting the one-liners onto the graphics, you know, when you sent them to me, I was thinking of this with Christina, where it's like Christina really does like Amadeus and Black Swan. Like, this might be Christina's genre of like,
top. Oh yeah, maybe.
Those are like two of your favorite movies.
Yeah, artistic vengeance. Well, hell yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with me. I need more therapies.
I was gonna say I'm not gonna try to take any of your talk time. I know that.
I was gonna say maybe you need like an arch enemy.
Yeah, ooh. Who the hell?
Yeah. Taking applications. Know. Hit us there in the comments. Go. Only super chats.
Yeah.
Hosts think they Mozart when they Salieri.
I'm gonna start being like, guys, that is Salieri ass energy.
That's so good. That's a legacy of sorts, right? Yeah. Being a shorthand for a specific time of petty bitch.
There's a psychological concept that came from Amadeus called Salieri syndrome. And it describes the feeling
like inferiority complex.
I'm guessing it's pop psychology, But Salieri syndrome describes the feelings of envy, resentment, and frustration of less talented or mediocre individual feels when confronted by the extraordinary talent of another.
Oh wow! Well, he did find fame eventually, I guess. Yeah. Counts. More movies should focus on a bitter old queen rehashing their biggest beef.
The amount of queening out that happened this whole movie for 3 hours, 3 hours. You know how much I loved bitchy cardinals. Now we have bitchy composers.
You're right.
Like, yeah. Anytime you have some sort of queening out bitch war, have me on the pod about it.
Apparently we do. You got a Gerwig or that?
Yeah, exactly. I got two looks, and that's it.
In this, even then, like, even in other, because they have this, like, they have that, like, ho, 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 like, sense, uh-huh. of, sensibility about everything we say, where it's like they're having to think, like, well, did you like it? Well, I thought it had too many notes.
Yeah, gotta have something to say.
It's probably music. I mean,
it probably does low key have too many notes.
I mean, he's not wrong. He's just being an asshole. Mozart literally thinks he is being hired by the ghost of his father, and he still procrastinates until the night before the deadline. So relatable,
ADHD
King.
ADHD feels.
Hired by the ghost of your father. I'll get to that.
Well, it's not like he's going anywhere. He's dead.
R.I.P. Mozart, you would have loved Ritalin to lock in.
I wrote this. Is this the best thing I've ever done? This is nothing.
This is just chicken scratch. Those are the Letterboxd one-liners for Amadeus. Please follow the show at our Letterboxd HQ account at Movie Night Extra. You can find logs of all the many episodes that we do of this show, as well as attendant short form content, linked materia, et cetera, et cetera. Please follow us on that platform. Requiem for the Dead, I'd always Flacco, your host over there. He is logging all the stuff that we do in this show, as well as many other things. Follow him on Letterboxd as well to see all his thoughts on things going on. I am the patron saint of mediocrity at Kona Neutron. You can follow me for the Criterion Challenge, the highbrow, the midbrow, the populist fair, all that stuff. Oh, I only got 6 left on the Criterion Challenge, actually. So I'm low key. I kind of want to do it before we go on tour this fall. I want to just have it done so I can be like, because I'm still like pairing with the first 2 years where I didn't finish. So, yeah. But follow me along for there for all that. If that sounds remotely of interest, or if you even are curious what that is, at Kona Neutron.
If you even care.
Yeah. Ooh, Rock Me Amadeus, Adam, Christina. You're going to get that reading for it. She's logging stuff for this show as well as many others. Lots of new releases, great stuff to follow Christina with. She keeps it succinct, unlike myself. Yeah. Of course, my first and one of my favorite Letterboxd friends, Lauren Chenard, Lonely Goat, her down over there. She's a lovely follow and a lovely person. Please follow her in Letterboxd as well, and you will be enriched by seeing her thoughts on the many movies. Let's hit it with the plugs.
If you're watching us on YouTube, please like and subscribe, and then hit the bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. And we'd humbly request that you watch the video to the end, because it helps us with the algorithm and helps more film fans to discover the show. We're also monetized. If you want to get your chat questions definitely read on stream, you can always send us a super chat, which will help us keep the show going. Every cent helps. If you're watching on Twitch, you can gift us a free sub on Amazon Prime with your Prime membership, but getting subs on Twitch is always appreciated. And it helps to follow us on there as well. We also have an audio feed, which is available wherever you download podcasts, if you prefer to listen to podcasts rather than watch the stream. That's updated usually the same day we stream, but watching on YouTube and Twitch is the best way to get the show first, live as it happens. If you want to support us with a monthly donation and get access to all of our after parties forever, which go patron only after we do them, you can become a patron at patreon.com/movienightextra. Link is in the description for that. It really helps us keep the show going, since we do have some expenses to make this happen. We also have a Discord community. Link is in the description for that. We sometimes watch movies we cover on there. We get into conversations about everything from film to TV shows to related podcasts. We even have a Discord channel for memes. It's really fun on there. You can find us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter, and Threads. You connect with us on all of those. Talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. Lastly, we recently made a TikTok at Movie Night Extra, where we're putting up short-form clips from the episodes. Okay, passing this to Conan so he can tell you about his music and this week's Protonic Reversal. Conan, who's on Protonic this week?
Yes. So Daniel House of Skin Yard, the classic grunge band with Jack and Dino, and CZ Records was on this week. It was a great conversation. He just started a podcast called The Creative Asylum. This launching. Spoiler alert, that episode's great. I'm also one of the first guests on his show. So that's very
Creative
cool.
Asylum sounds like somewhere Salieri would go. So
that's actually where he was talking to that priest at. Yeah, it's a creative asylum. So that's in the patron queue, patreon.com/protonicreversal, $1 a month for advanced access. Hits out later. The Tom Flynn episode, Boner Records, Fang, Star Pimp, Antler Family, so on and so on. That episode just hit the general feed, available for all and all those places. Tim Media to Silkworm. We're back. Ooh. Silkworm are playing reunited shows, which is a huge deal in my world. He's coming up this week. That should be great. Is there going to be more than these three or four shows? I don't know. I'll probably ask him. You can find out with me. Neutronfriends.bandcamp.com for Co-Neutron, The Secret Friends, on tour in October and November, heading out to Rat City Recon in Seattle. Here it is. This is older, but yeah, Chicago, Minneapolis, Lincoln, Denver, Salt Lake City, Boise, Eugene, Portland, and then Rat City Recon in Seattle with Piss Jeans, Austerity Program, Buildings, God Bullies, and more. It's going to be great. November, we got Kansas City, Jackson, Mississippi, Atlanta, Georgia, New Orleans, Austin and Denton, Wichita, Santa Fe, and Phoenix. And then we have a show in Los Angeles with Mike Watt and for my birthday in December, which is going to be great. And I did do all that without any notes. Thank you very much. Neutronfriends.bandcamp.com. Way of the Neutron is the new record. You can get it on any of the streaming platforms, as well as purchase CDs, vinyl records, digital, any of that kind of stuff. Always appreciated. Purchase is always good. It helps keep the whole operation running. I think that is it. Christina, what do you got?
I'm still streaming on Twitch. I'm blowing up on TikTok just as it's about to get bought out by some right-wing pro-Israel company. Yay! Don't we love that?
Yeah, just like you predicted. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And of course, Robert of Good Morning Comrade and myself are working on a Dark Shadows podcast called Morning in right. Collinwood. Nice. We already have a Patreon page. I gotta link that somewhere, so he's got to send me it because he's very organized. His workout. I had my show this earlier on this space with Alex, Devil's Advocate. Oh, yeah. We were just talking about the Charlie Kirk thing and trying not to laugh too much about it, and you know, whatever.
They're gonna get you fired from this space.
I know. Everyone's like, people, if you're worried about getting fired, I'm gonna tell you the secret. Say you're already been fired. Okay. I lost my job. Like, my mom's my own boss. Like, okay, whatever.
Or just be unemployed and just
unemployed.
Yeah, just click unemployment or whatever. But yeah, still streaming on Twitch. We had a bit of fun. We finally watched Lady Gaga's Brazil concert, which was so fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. That was so good. Loved it. And yeah, don't really got much else going on. I'm assuming.
Do you have a launch date for your Dark Shadows podcast?
Not yet, but I will definitely keep posted. We're gonna do like a few test runs, I think, before we dive in. I'm gonna try to ask some of the cast members that are still alive if they want to come on, because we got a lot of competition, and by that I mean one other podcast.
Hell yeah, yeah. But yours is clearly the best. So
yeah, and we haven't even had an episode out yet.
Theme song bangs.
Yeah. By the way, I still remember somebody tried to get, like, not recently, but like I think it was like a year or two ago. Somebody tried to get me fired, but since I didn't have a job, they tried contacting Jason Miles.
Great. That's love fun. It.
And Jason was like, he doesn't work for me.
Other than that, foolproof plan.
But Lauren, what do you got? What's going on?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, I just closed my show. So that means that I am officially on break from theater, which is really nice. However, I've been really getting into burlesque. So if you like what you see and you want to see way too much more of me, you can always, you can follow me at my alt account, which is at Maria Von Thirst Trap. Hilarious. And,
good inspo for when I make my fantasy account. Yes.
And I'm doing shows all over the Bay Area. So I love to meet people. And I think burlesque is like really fun. And you should come support me and the girls. And then, oh, for real? Yeah, dude, come on down.
They're trying. Well, speaking of burlesque, they're trying to make that movie into an actual stage show too.
They did. It's on the West End right now. And I've heard it's like selling like hotcakes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we're all about a silk robe. Also, in addition to my performing stuff, I start grad school next week. So,
nice.
I'm going to become a therapist so I can help people with Salieri complex.
Being on this show is great practice.
So that's what I've been up to. And of course, you can follow me on Letterboxd at Lonely Goat Herd. Now that I'm not doing theater, I can actually sit at my house and watch movies because I want to see
lots of stuff down again.
Exactly. So, yeah. So that's where I'll be.
I'd be curious as your thoughts on Splitsville, because I loved it. And I was like, Splitsville? Have you seen Splitsville yet?
No, not yet.
It's way better than the previews lead it to believe. Okay. And that is a nice.
I'm excited.
You get very curious.
Very stoked.
All right.
Yeah.
Lauren, do you have some final thoughts on Salieri, on Mozart, on classical music, on Amadeus, on all of it?
Listen, Mozart did use too many notes, but like I love him.
It's not wrong.
It's cool because I feel like it's people talk about how classical music is a dying art. People can't like go to the like symphony and the opera or whatever because it's so expensive and it's so hoity-toity or whatever. I like anything that makes classical music accessible, makes it fun, makes people curious, makes people think about why we have the accessibility issues that we have in the arts. And also just like, it's just cheeky and fun. And so I'm a fan of anything that makes you want to dig deeper into music history. And it really was like a catalyst like that for me. So 5 stars, love Amadeus, will be like one of my favorite movies forever.
Hell yeah. Christina, final thoughts.
If you think you're being the ultimate hater, you are not doing a good job. Step up your game, watch this movie, and learn how to be a real hater, okay? I'm just saying. Anyway.
To be fair, not everyone gives a roadmap to their opera. We need more people to do opera so you can hate on people.
Also, it's and of course Tom Hulce makes this movie. I mean, F. Murray Abraham even said it in his Oscar speech. He's like, I can't have this award without him, you know, which is something we didn't really get to go over, but he said that. And also F. Murray Abraham, still alive, still kicking as an actor. He's only 85. Spring chicken.
We have a poor track record of killing
people. Track record of killing people on this podcast.
Track record, depending on how you look at it. Yeah. An Undertaker.
But yeah, if you're looking for
Undertaker, thank you.
If you're someone who likes like the historical and accurate, like embellished, like historical fiction of like a lot of like people, if you like the great or whatever, you will love Amadeus. Okay, you will love Amadeus without a doubt. Trust me. And also, you will love Falco's song, which was inspired from the movie. I had to answer it.
Amadeus.
Yeah, as Christina mentioned, Salieri is the queen of the player haters ball in this picture, and that's we love it. If you expect a stodgy biopic, as you have every right to expect, you got nothing coming with this. It may be loose with the facts, but it's entertaining drama of genius, mediocrity, gatekeeping, and jealousy, and you gotta love it. I love the brain laugh and. All of the inherent and obnoxious flaws that are generally rounded off when thinks of like the winners of history. It's very profound. The production design is unreal. It's so amazing in this. Like it's so the set dressing, all of it. It's so authentic and so huge in the best possible way. You gotta love Tom Hulce doing convincingly playing piano in all the scenes too. For all the musicians out there, they're like, oh, he's not really playing, which would be me. Normal.
He's a guitarist, though. He knows how to play his guitar.
He is a guitarist. There is a bass. They're very different instruments, but what he is playing matches what you hear on the screen, which is the important thing. In a word, exuberant, and a pleasure to cover this one. And yeah, I'm surprised it took us this long, frankly. But here we are, episode 295. Love to do it with Lauren. So,
hell yeah,
working on that phrasing
too, guys.
So next week we're doing Annette. That's our,
Yes. Yeah. So if you want to see Adam Driver as a MRA comedian and a musical featuring a puppet scored by Sparks, join us next week. It's Annette. We have Kev from Austin Danger podcast and Scott from, what's a Little White Elephants? What is his new show called? Okay, it's like 5 episodes of it. Anyway, they're Scott and Terrianti. Love them both. They're going to be great. It's the only Leos Carax movie we've done so far. And it should be a hell of a time. It's a deeply weird movie. And I'm
We should maybe talk about doing a letter or a Discord watch. We haven't done that in a while.
That's, I feel like most people have not seen Annette in general, let alone our Discord. So yeah, let's do it.
You're in for a treat.
All right.
That's crazy.
Thanks so much for coming on, Lauren. Thank you. Annette next week, and then after that, we're starting our month of witches. I think, right?
Yeah.
Which month? October.
Yeah.
All right.
That's not going to get old at all. I can tell you that right now.
On that note, we're signing.